Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're going to tell you about the Bever family murders. I know that nothing we talk about on here is for the faint of heart, and it's not family friendly, but I do feel the need sometimes to state specifically that we will be describing a particularly gruesome scene, and them kids in the backseat need some earmuffs on. As soon as people found out that we started a podcast, we started getting case suggestions. Molly Miller and Colt Haynes was one, along with Tom Brown. But more than any other, we are told that we need to do the Bever brothers. So here you go, people. You asked for it. This is a widely known case. It made national headlines. But we are going to give some details that may be hard for some to hear. So use your own discretion listening to this one. You know you and what you can handle. So safety first. We're talking about a family of nine living in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. We have Dad, 52-year-old David, who is a technology consultant for HP Enterprise Services, according to LinkedIn. He was said to be quiet and kept to himself. Mom, 44-year-old April, her and David were married back in 1987, so she was just 15 years old when they got married. Her parents had to sign off on the marriage before they could even do it. She was super into Reddit and online forums where she talked about being a stay-at-home mom, homeschooling, and her kids. Her screen name was Aoki Mom, like A-O-K Mom. It's cute. And one comment really stuck out to me that she made online. When talking on a frugal subreddit where someone asked, "Is remaining child-free the most frugal way to be?" April responded, "I would never give up having any of my children so I could have more money. They are amazing people, and the world will benefit by having them in it." The seven kids are Robert, who is 18, Michael, 16, Crystal, 13, Daniel, 12, Christopher, 7, Victoria, 5, and baby Autumn, who is just 2 years old. They lived in a fairly large house in a decent Broken Arrow neighborhood. As mentioned, the kids were homeschooled, and they rarely went outside because the parents were paranoid and wouldn't let the kids talk to strangers. Neighbors didn't even know the names of all the kids until after this incident happened. One time they were allowed in youth court program and a bowling league for one season, but that was all the sports activities they had. And Robert was technically an adult, so he was allowed to get a job close by at a Christian call center, and he was allowed to spend his own money. One thing that the kids had without restriction was the internet. Robert liked to role-play different characters online, which made him get into character in real life. So he bought body armor and even bought a set for Michael. They became obsessed with the movie Rampage and mass shootings like Columbine. They admired people like the Colorado movie theater shooter James Holmes and Jim Jones, the cult leader. Robert thought society was pointless. Around July 1st of 2015, they found out that they could buy guns online and have them shipped to a local gun store for pickup. They thought the guns would go great with their collection of knives and body armor.
They also ordered ammunition that was going to be shipped directly to their house and, you know, was to be delivered July 23rd of 2015. But the night before, you know, on July 22nd, you know, they was getting antsy.
They were actually in there laying out their knives and getting their gear ready when Crystal stuck her head inside the room and told him that April wanted him to do the dishes. Michael told her to come and look at something on the computer, and when Crystal went over, Robert came up behind her and slit her throat. Crystal screamed and fought back, but Robert stabbed her in her arms and abdomen. April heard the commotion and ran towards them, and she would end up being stabbed 48 times in her scalp, ears, temple, cheeks, neck, chin, chest, abdomen, back, arm, elbow, wrist, palm, hand, and fingers. That was a damn list. I should have just said all over her body. She had internal damage to large blood vessels that pump blood to your organs. David, the dad, was then stabbed a total of 28 times in the back, chest, abdomen, neck, arms, palm, and cheek. He also suffered blunt force trauma to his chest, abdomen, arms, elbow, finger, wrist, thigh, and back. The autopsy report did not speculate what the trauma was from. But some stab wounds affected his organs, like his lungs, bowel, spleen, left kidney, and carotid artery. So he likely lived for only a few minutes. But one thing was clear from all this. They both tried to defend themselves. Victoria and Christopher locked themselves in a bathroom. Michael convinced them to open the door, saying that Robert was trying to kill him, and so the kids opened the door and let him in. Victoria was stabbed more than a dozen times. I read on the autopsy report it was more like 18. In the sides of her neck, chest, back, and upper arms. Christopher was stabbed 7 times. While all this was going on, 12-year-old Daniel had locked himself in his dad's office and called 911 at around 11:30 p.m. And we will play that 911 call. So if you don't want to hear it, please skip ahead because it's kind of hard.
Yeah, this one's real hard. And I'll go ahead and play it, but take caution.
Broken Arrow 911. Hello? Hi, where are you at?
Duke and out, Oklahoma, 7411.
What address?
709 Magnolia Court.
Okay. Are you the only one there?
No. My brother's attacking my family.
Your dad is attacking your family?
No, my brother. He has an idea of killing me.
Okay, who's attacking your family?
What?
Who's attacking your family?
Yes.
Who is it? Do they
have it? I'll call them back.
And so what happened was that he was on the phone with 911 operator and Michael came in and took the phone from him and you could hear it at the end. He said hello and then hangs up the phone.
Yeah, they originally said it was Robert that did it, but you can hear Daniel on the 911 tape saying no, Michael.
Yeah, that's just hard to listen to because even for me just sitting here listening to it and everything, I mean, it's just a little kid sitting there having to go through all this and then, you know, then that happened to him.
Yeah, it was so sad.
Yeah.
And sadly, Daniel would be stabbed 7 times in the back, shoulder, and chest. Robert went back to Crystal and tried to suffocate her because she was still alive at this point. And they had planned on decapitating 2-year-old Autumn. But luckily, the police were arriving by this point, and they knew that they had to flee. Detective Brett Burton with the Broken Arrow Police Department said he could see blood on the sidewalk and front step when he came up and faintly heard someone calling for help inside. Crystal was found just inside the front door. Michael and Robert had escaped out the back of the house but were quickly arrested in a wooded area close to the house by a canine at around 12:30 a.m. They were covered in blood and mud. Their clothes were ripped. Detective Burton said they had a sense of cockiness, and Corporal Leon Calhoun said one of them had a smirk on his face. That would be Robert.
They took pictures of the boys when they were caught, and Robert has, you know, that damn smirk still on his face in this picture.
Yeah, it's eerie to know when you're looking at that picture what he had just done, and then he's just smiling.
And wasn't Robert the older one?
Yeah, Robert's the 18-year-old.
And Robert's the one that, you know, in the mugshot. The one that I think's funny,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes, well, that's him.
When you guys see the mugshots on the post and everything, you'll see why I think it's funny.
And we talk about it in a minute, too.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll talk about it all the time.
I don't give a damn. Nope. Crystal did luckily survive. Her and Autumn would sadly be the only survivors. Crystal was able to tell police her version of events. She said that after her mom came in, Crystal ran to tell her younger sister to lock herself in the bathroom while Robert was chasing her, and Michael stayed and killed April. Crystal tried to find a cell phone and ran to open the front door to run outside and yell for help, but she passed out on the front lawn. She woke up to Michael dragging her back into the house, and she could hear her younger brothers screaming. The next thing she knew, a cop was banging on the door, broke in the door, and carried her out. So the boys were charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder and one count of assault and battery with a deadly weapon for Crystal's attack. Michael's attorney, Rob Nye, filed to have Michael tried as a juvenile. Oklahoma state law says that 15 to 17-year-olds charged with first-degree murder are not eligible to be tried for juvenile or youthful offender certification, but Nye was challenging the constitutionality of the law. The judge basically told him to fuck off and went ahead and tried Michael as an adult.
If you can plan this out and follow through with it, you're very aware that it's wrong. And, you know, he had plenty of time to stop it.
Yeah, he could have told. He could have done anything. Like, he could have stopped this. I mean, because in their interrogations, I might be jumping ahead a little bit, but Michael puts it all on Robert. But Michael was there. Michael was there through the planning, through the buying of the weapons, through actually carrying out the crime. Even if he didn't actually kill anybody, which is what he says, he was luring them to open the door so that Robert could get in to do it. So either way, you're culpable.
Yeah. And like whenever they asked him why he did it and everything, he said, I want to be famous.
They all want, yep. They do.
Want to be famous.
That's what they wanted. And they haven't ever released Robert's initial interview, but they have released Michael's, and you can watch it online. And he told them everything at the station immediately. Police did testify that Robert laughed describing the attack in his interview, and even said that killing more than one person made him feel like a god. Michael told police in his interview that he didn't kill anybody. He said that Robert was motivated by his hatred of everyone, and he had a desire to be famous. But Michael said all he wanted was his learner's permit. He did admit to stabbing Christopher and his mom, but not to killing them. Just kind of more like a pressure thing, where Michael and Robert were like discussing what they were doing or whatever, and he felt like he had to participate, maybe forced in a way to participate. He also said that they ran into the woods to escape, and Robert asked him how many he got, and Michael said he told him 3. But that wasn't true. They were talking about how many they had actually killed. And he said he killed 3, but that was a lie. He admitting that stabbing someone wasn't like it is on TV, where you stab someone one time and they die. Well, no shit, Michael. But he didn't realize that Crystal was able to tell her story. And it didn't quite match up with him being a scared little bystander. Michael went to trial. And in May of 2018, after 5 hours of deliberation, the jury found him guilty. He tried to sit down after hearing the verdict and fell on the floor. He had to be helped back into his chair by a sheriff's deputy. Also, while he was in Tulsa County Jail, he kept a journal with crayon drawings showing dead bodies and other images described as morbid and violent. At his sentencing, he said, "Every minute of every second, I've been thinking about what I could have done differently and what kind of life I could have had with my family." After that, the judge decided that she needed more time to think things through when it came to his sentence. But on August 9th, she finally sentenced him to 5 life terms to run consecutively, plus 28 more years for the assault on Crystal.
Robert did testify at Michael's trial. He tried to take the credit of all the murders.
He did. And I think they had that plan to begin with, is so that Robert could take all the fall and Michael could hopefully, I don't know if they thought he was just going to walk out the door or what, but I'm pretty sure that was their plan.
What, get out and strike again?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. He said that he only said that Michael had done any of the killings to help him get the notoriety. But now he doesn't want to give him credit because he didn't actually kill anybody. But Michael admitted to stabbing 2 family members. And come on, let's go to the world where he didn't actually kill anyone. He was there. He took part. He tricked the younger kids, playing off their trust to let them be killed. You're done. The plan all along was to have articles written about them, to have a Wikipedia page, to be famous for killing a bunch of people. The original plan was to start with their family. And since they were so reclusive, they figured no one would notice that the family was dead for a long time, that they could cut the bodies up, store the bodies in storage containers, and put them in the attic of the house. Then they could live there as long as they needed to get ready. They would then start a drive to Washington State, and every time they'd stop somewhere, they would kill around 5 random people. The overall goal was 500 people. He also shed some light on their living situation. They said that there were locks all over the house. The parents were really hard on Robert and then decided that they couldn't raise their other kids quite so harshly. But that didn't mean that there weren't issues still. Robert did reportedly go to a preschool, but was molested, so they pulled him out, and none of the kids were allowed in school after that. The kids would later say that both parents would lock themselves inside their offices most of the time, but David would go to the casino once a week. April would find educational websites for them, but the kids were mostly self-taught. Occasionally, they would be able to go to the grocery store. They usually ate ramen noodles and peanut butter sandwiches. April would eat frozen TV dinners, and David would eat grilled cheese, chicken, chips, and olives. David would even put the chips high in the cabinet so that the kids couldn't get to them.
They were estranged from grandparents, aunts, uncles, and hardly ever saw them, so there wasn't anyone close to the family.
No, there was nobody there that they could confide in or talk to about what they were going through. And since they never left the house and never went anywhere, I mean, they were just trapped there. They felt trapped.
Well, hell, they probably didn't want to be around anybody else because they were probably afraid one of the kids would say something to a family member.
Yeah, the parents, but I'm talking about the kids. The poor kids had no contact with the outside world except through the internet. And it's eerie now. You can actually go back and see online some of these videos that Robert posted. Robert used to post videos all the time. He thought he was really funny. There's even videos of him and Michael doing skits and stuff. It's like really eerie now. Robert recalled a time that he and David were playing basketball, and they tripped over each other, both falling to the ground. And he said David threw a shoe at his face, and they never played basketball again. David had installed security cameras in the bedrooms and hallways and would watch the cameras on his phone when he wasn't home. He remembered two instances where David punched, shoved, and kicked Michael, which they said was actually common behavior. And David used to yell at Michael and shake him because he was frustrated that Michael had a speech impediment. He said, which he is Robert, they never thought we were good enough and wanted us to be better. Robert stated having thoughts about killing his parents when he was around 13 years old. And Crystal said that she knew that Michael and Robert had started talking about wanting to kill their family and steal their money for about a year before the actual murders happened. They were obsessed with serial killers. She said she told her mom about it, and she just said they were boys being boys. Crystal said their dad was only upset that they were wasting their money on body armor and knives. And she too recalls her dad throwing the kids around the room in the past when he was mad, and that her parents had talked about them being too rough on Robert and Michael when they were younger. The parents had a fight once where her dad threw her mom and hit her head on the wall.
Luckily, she didn't have to testify in Michael's trial in person. They took the testimony from the detectives.
Yeah. So the detectives said what she reported to them, read her interviews and things like that. That way she wouldn't have to actually physically be in the room when they were in trial. To have to go through that and then sit in the same room with the person who did it, like that's trauma on top of trauma. And what would a Murder with the Misses episode be without a little police corruption? In February 2018, Broken Arrow Police Detective Gayla Adcock tendered her resignation because there were claims that she mishandled evidence. They haven't released a lot of information on this, but one news report stated that she released some evidence to an auction house, including a journal written by Crystal. Another news report says that she collected items, primarily a hard drive from one of the computers in the home, from an auction house, and put them in a locker. She meant to take them to the department's property room later, but forgot. Either way, that breaks the chain of custody, and they had to be left out of trial. Another thing I read in one or two reports was that there was a video camera found next to one of the bodies, so it's believed that they may have either filmed some of the scene or was planning on filming the aftermath. But nothing was in the court records released to the public saying video evidence was found or shown in court. So I imagine the latter is true, that they were planning on filming it after. Robert has since been diagnosed with major depressive disorder with psychotic features, PTSD, and some doctors say he has borderline personality disorder, autism, and schizophrenia. On June 17th of 2016, this was before he testified in Michael's trial, Robert took his sleeping boat, which is it's kind of a thing shaped like a canoe that inmates sleep in when they don't have a bed. He propped it up against the toilet, and then he tied a sheet around his neck and the boat where it would make his head hang freely, and he attempted to kill himself, but he was caught. Court hearings kept being postponed because they were debating the death penalty. But in September, Robert took a plea deal to avoid trial and the death penalty. He was sentenced to 5 terms of life without parole and 1 term of life, all to run consecutively. On July 15th of 2019, at the Joseph Harp Correctional Center in Lexington, at about 4:40 p.m., Robert approached 2 staff members with an 8-inch shank, and one of them got Robert in a bear hug and got him to drop the weapon. But in 2020, he was given 3 more concurrent life sentences to run consecutively to his already 6 life sentences. He now has tattoos on his knuckles saying LWOPX5, which means life without parole times 5. And on another hand, life, LIFE.
And he also has bangs. It looks like somebody's bitch.
He does. We'll try to post the picture on our Facebook.
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to. Well, no, I'm putting the photo on the freaking story.
Okay.
Yes. Whenever you guys see the story, you're going to see this little bitch boy with long hair and bangs and everything else. So how famous did you want to be?
You can watch his, like, his mug shots because, you know, they take your picture throughout prison and stuff every time you come up for something. And you can watch the progression into his femininity.
I just think it's funny. It's not funny for the family. It's just,
no.
What's funny is that he thought, he was like, oh, I just want to be famous. And everything. Well, guess what, famous motherfucker? Now you're a bitch.
You're a bitch.
You're a prison bitch.
That's right.
That's all you'll be for the rest of your life.
Mm. And for anyone keeping track, yes, there was several thousand rounds of ammunition to be delivered to the house the day after the murders. But police had FedEx intercept them and turn the packages over to them. Police also picked up 3 packages at the gun shop that contained 2 Glocks and a shotgun. Neighbors in the surrounding area tried to get authorities to demolish the house. It had not even been cleaned since the murders. It was just sitting there, but they wouldn't do it. On March 18th, 2017, the family home burned. Investigators have not determined the cause of the fire.
Who cares?
The neighbors didn't.
No, that's what I'm saying. Who cares?
There's rumors that
I wouldn't want to live in a neighborhood where, you know, that house is just sitting there staring at me the whole damn time.
True.
I'm having to walk by it in my neighborhood and walk my dog or whatever and having to look over at this murder house.
Plus, there was a lot of people coming to look at the house. A lot of them morbidly curious that want to see crime scenes.
Yeah, so they was breaking into the house to go and see the crime scene and everything else. And I mean, you know, that's just...
It brings weariness to the neighbors who are still living there. Like, all these random strangers are now in their neighborhood doing what? Why are you here? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what they did with it and everything, I think with the house burning down, I think that's the best thing that could happen for that neighborhood.
I think the neighborhood believes it as well. Because like I said, there was also rumors that the fire department really just kind of kept it contained.
Yeah,
instead, they kind of let it go a little longer.
I think whenever they finally got there and everything, they seen that it was basically too far gone. They was just like, let's just go ahead and let it burn on down. So they just kept it contained in that area to where it could finish out. And
well, they knew it was not going to be a loss
they couldn't save it at that point.
Family home going down. They knew what the house was. So it wasn't like they were trying to save anything from it what I'm saying. They knew it was a loss.
But the whole thing is, too, is that the house was on fire so bad that it was to a point where they couldn't save the house. So they went ahead and let it burn down to where it was more manageable.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, okay.
I'm just kidding. I did not.
You didn't say that?
No.
Oh, holy shit. I must have missed something.
No. But Broken Arrow City Councilor Mike Lester started fundraising. And he was able to purchase the home, or the lot that it was on, and turn it into a memorial garden named Reflection Park. So that is what is on the home site today. And Crystal and Autumn were adopted by the same family, so they are still together.
That's good.
Yes.
And I've seen this you know, we've seen the reflection park and everything. It's actually mm-hmm. really nice. I actually did a house remodel, or I helped out with a house remodel over in that area, and you could actually see it from the from that person's backyard.
Yeah,
and everything. Nice. So it's nice to see that instead of, you know,
what was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see it online too. Like if you just look up Reflection Park in Broken Arrow, it's really pretty. It shows it.
Yeah, they did a really good job with it.
They did a very good job. But like we said, this has been highly requested. Everyone wants to see it. Everyone wants to hear it. It was a very, very bad thing. Very tragic. And so there, now you have the details. And if you or someone you know is a victim of domestic violence, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or text the word START to 88788.
All right, well, that's it for the Bever Brothers. Join us next time on the next one.
Bye.